Hello, Pod Smashers of the Internet, and welcome to another episode of
80-Bit Pod Smash,
where gaming goes to grab a beer.
Woo!
We are your hosts,
Penguin and Termite. I am Penguin.
I am Termite, and we are where gaming goes to grab a beer.
Yes, we're a weekly video game podcast where we smash together topics that you listeners care about, and we somehow work in video games into the general idea. And today we have a very extra special episode. You may even hear how extra special it is already, because we are recording live on location for the first time since the pandemic started. Actually,
first time in person,
mind you, yes. And we are joined by a very special guest, and he is the owner of and operator of a arcade in a barcade in Fredericksburg that just opened up or will be opening up, and we're very excited to interview him. And his name is Tim, and he will introduce himself now.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Thank you for joining us. Thank you for inviting us into your space. I am super excited. This is my passion. Old school video games, arcades, like I grew up with this. I'm super excited that you even have this place, the collection you have here. So thank you for letting us come in. Thank you for joining us on the show.
I'm excited to have people in the space and kind of expose people to what we're doing here. You know, while we can't get open, it's really cool to just get the word out.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thrilled to be here. Like Termite said, we have a bent towards retro gaming and classic gaming in a lot of ways on our show. Obviously, we talk about new stuff, and we're hugely into, you know, our PlayStation 4s is what we are primarily interacting with games with, but we're both softies for classic games, retro stuff, and so this having this here close to us now is very, very exciting. So tonight, yes, we are where gaming goes to grab a beer. So Termite, do you want to tell the listeners what we're drinking tonight?
Yes. So I have a special 4-pack that was brought to us by a friend of the show. His name is Sean. Thank you so much. He went to Aslan Brewing in Alexandria, Virginia. There's also another location in Herndon. And brought to us by Aslan Brewing, a beer called Master of Karate. It is a double IPA. It is absolutely fantastic. Good and juicy, full-bodied, with a sweetness that hits the back end as soon as it goes down. And I love this beer. I've never had it until tonight. You guys can give your inputs to what you think of the beer, but I think this is a 4.5 out of 5 solid IPA.
Yeah, what are your thoughts, Tim, on this beer?
Well, you know, I think you picked this because you asked me what style I love, and I said I'm all about the hoppier IPAs, you know, and especially the New England style. And so this one is definitely a really great one. You know, for me, you know, a lot of them just sort of get lost. They're sort of that basic profile of a New England style IPA that's kind of like, okay, it is what it is. It's a double IPA. There's not much going on, but this definitely has a lot of really nice fruity characteristics and notes to it that I really like. So,
Sweet. I love the name. Sure. Master of
I was going to say, he would have picked this whether you liked IPAs or not, because he does it to me all the time.
I do. I love IPAs.
It's good. I mean, for an IPA, I like it. It's smooth. It's
and Aslan always knocks it out of the park, for sure.
Absolutely. All right, cool. Well, normally we fill this section in with news and stuff, but we will save that for...
Nintendo announced a whole bunch of cool, awesome, crazy stuff. We will address it. Do not worry.
It's true, yes.
Audience, we will get there. We will process that with you, and you will not miss out what Termite and Penguin have to say about what Nintendo's doing, but not tonight.
Not tonight, no, yeah. And disclaimer up front, like I said, you may already be able to hear a difference in the sound quality. That's due to two things. We're not recording over Zencastr like we normally are, and we're actually we're in the arcade. We're in the space, the reclaim space. So it's a little, again, it's a big arcade room. So it's not filled with people like it will be intended to be.
Yes.
And those people aren't here to absorb the sound. And so we're getting a little bit of an echo, which you probably can already hear.
Man, rub it in, man. You're not here and we are.
Exactly. So again, yeah. So if you hear that echo, just again, we're trying to be upfront. We're on site, on location, and it's a blast. It's awesome being surrounded by games right now. And but yeah, there'll be an echo, so hopefully it sounds okay on your end. We did some tests and it sounded okay for us, so hopefully it sounds okay for you guys. You know, listening in your cars at full volume like you do. But yeah, so we're gonna skip the news for now. We'll get to it next week, so we're not trying to ignore anything that's going on. We just want to maximize our time here with Tim. So let's see, that moves us to our next segment though, right? We can go ahead and move on, go to our first segment,
which is
doing this podcast is our favorite thing. Doing this podcast is our favorite thing. Woo, that echo, I
it
like
does.
It.
It does. It sounds favorite. So good. We haven't done that in person in 6 months.
So we haven't been able to sync up like that. Oh. We usually alternate. It's great. Yep.
Amazing.
So favorite things is a segment of our show where we just sort of share our favorite thing for the week, the thing that we've discovered or the thing that we've rediscovered, something that hopefully our listeners will be able to discover as their next favorite thing. We'll be inspired to go out and seek that. So we'd like to give our guests a chance to share first. So what's your favorite thing this week? It could be anything in the world. It could be as simple as this beer. It could be as deep and meaningful as a profound experience you had. But go ahead and, yeah.
Gosh, so for me, it's actually gaming related. And it's maybe even a little bit news related, although maybe not the news that you all normally cover. But Stern Pinball, we have several pinball machines by them released, and they're not shipping yet, but they're going to ship within the next couple of weeks, an Avengers Infinity Quest pinball machine.
Ooh.
That looks just absolutely amazing. This is a gorgeous machine. They've got a guy named Zombie Yeti on the artwork who does incredible artwork for the games. They've got a guy named Keith Elwin doing the rules, and who's an amazing pinball player and actually has turned out to be an amazing designer of pinball. He did Jurassic Park. He did Iron Maiden pinball machines. And so they're releasing Avengers Infinity Quest, and it looks absolutely beautiful. And so I'm pining for maybe getting it into the space here. We'll see. Nice. So that's been my favorite thing, is just kind of like reading up on everything that is released, which is almost nothing other than beautiful, beautiful images right now.
So, is there a release date or a window? And
there is. Well, so they're going to start producing them, and probably by the end of the month, they're going to start shipping the first ones out.
So end of September.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right,
yeah.
Sweet.
So very soon here. That Stern is one of the biggest pinball manufacturers, and there's not many left, and so, but they are a production house, and so when they put a game out, I mean, they crank them out. This is their second, maybe even their third game this year that they've put out, so they're a force to be reckoned with. But the games are amazing. So,
sweet.
Fantastic. Yeah. That's exciting.
Do you have anything here by them?
I do. So Stern, we've got Stranger Things, and we've got Ghostbusters by them here in the space. Yeah.
Sweet. Yeah, I saw the Stranger Things one earlier. It caught my eye.
Yeah,
so.
I want to play it. Why are we here? Oh, all right. We're doing a podcast.
Oh, that's right. We're recording.
What's your favorite thing?
So that's it. That's the show. We're going to go play games now. My favorite thing, gosh, I'm torn between two. So I'll do them both quick. Me and my wife have been watching through the Avatar series, mm-hmm. Avatar Last Airbender and Legend of Korra. So we finished Airbender this week and started Korra. So I've watched through the first show, and I've watched through the first two seasons of Korra. But revisiting them, number one, is awesome, especially while they're kind of culturally...
Yeah, we're hitting them for
relevant,
the first time.
You know, yep. People, yeah, a lot of people are kind of rediscovering or discovering it for the first
don't
time.
Don't spoil anything.
I won't spoil anything.
All right, cool.
So my wife is discovering it for the first time, so it's fun watching through it with her. Because she did, I mean, I tried to get her to watch it a long time ago, and she just wasn't into it because it was a, quote, kids show. So now it's like, I'm forcing you to do this, you're watching it with me, and now she's into it, like anybody who actually gives the show a chance is, in my experience. The other thing is, just today was the perfect Labor Day. I didn't do anything until later when a friend came over and we took our kids out. But I just, like, it was nice to just have a day where it's just like, I don't have to do anything. So
I'm jealous.
Yeah. It was, I literally just sat on the couch and, like, read my book while watching my kid, making sure he wasn't, like, crashing into walls or anything. But yeah, more or less just kind of reading my phone, reading my book, and relaxing. I took two naps
wow.
today.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
The record for me.
With a toddler in the house? That's incredible. Good job. Good work.
They were cat naps. They weren't but they was like, you know, a good like 15-minute snoozer. It was great.
All right. That's it?
That's it.
All right. I have two as well, but I'll make the first one quick. So we, 80-Bit Pod Smash, streams on Twitch every Wednesday evening at 8 o'clock. We do about an hour-long stream, twitch.tv/80BitPodSmash. We'll go into where we are. I'll do the plug later. But I recently acquired an Elgato capture card. Before, we were just using the PS4 natively, or my PC, where I had access to Xbox games through Game Pass Ultimate. So I could do some Xbox games and PlayStation 4 games, but that was it. Now, I have a capture card with an HDMI input, and that just expands my possibilities to PlayStation 3, Xbox 360, the classic NES, Super NES minis that we have, the Sega Genesis that I have, the mini, the HDMI. And I did a 3-hour-long play segment of Super Mario Bros. 3 last Saturday, and I almost finished the entire game, but my goal was to do 100%, because, you know, Mario 3 has a world map with all the worlds, and you can kind of skip around. Like, you can get the whistles, you can skip ahead, you can, like, unlock certain paths through. But I wanted to do every single level, even if I didn't have to do it, to finish the... And I got to world 8, and I did level 1 before I had to end after 3 hours. And I had a blast on chat with all of my friends, all of you guys, the Pod Smashers. It was a blast. That was one of my favorite things. My second favorite thing was today. I had a perfect Labor Day as well. I took the family on a trip. Like, my wife and I got together. We're like, let's do a family trip. We went to Charlottesville, and we hiked in the mountains close to Carter Mountain Orchard. And there was a trail that we walked through. It was 3.6 miles up the mountain and back. And then afterward, we went to Blue Mountain Brewery, and had like an early dinner and some beers, and it was a phenomenal evening.
We were able to sit outside and see, the mountains.
It was gorgeous.
They have an amazing
outside
area.
Because we talked about with our friend, you know, who came over, we talked about going to Charlottesville today.
So that would have been crazy if we'd have saw each other.
We would never have run into each other. No, Charlottesville's a big place.
It is nuts, but it's huge. So that was my favorite. Those are my favorite things.
Awesome. Well, great. That leads us to our final segment before our main topic and the meat of our interview here, and that is DLC. Stands for downloadable content, because both of our names are Dan, and it is a fun mini discussion, a conversation you wouldn't normally have about video games.
A little extra thing you would add on to your video game.
Right. So since we are in a physical space, I wanted to take advantage of it with that as much as possible, sitting down and recording a show. So our DLC today is I want to talk about this space. I want to talk about the games in this space that we are surrounded by right now. And so my first question is for DLC, what is your favorite game in this space? Tim gave us a tour, you know, for a little bit before we started, and so we got a chance to look at everything in here. But I want Tim to answer first. He's our guest. We like to put him on the spot. But also, I know it's kind of like picking your favorite baby, your favorite child, but if you could pick a video game in this space that's your single favorite, what would it be?
Oh, man, that's a really difficult one, too, because they are all really good. And I'm a huge pinball guy, but I will resist doing pinball, and I'll stick to arcade games for whatever reason. And so for me, I actually think Joust is probably my favorite.
Very good.
In part, it was one of the earlier games that we got, and it sat right behind me in the office while I was working. And so every break from the office work, I would just turn around, and I would play the game. But it was fairly new to me. It's not one that I played as a kid all that much. You know, I was born in 82, so I kind of missed that first wave of arcades. And so, you know, and then Joust wasn't one that really got converted to Super Nintendo or anything else like that, which was really more my era. And so it was kind of new to me. And I was sort of like, what in the world is this? Like, it's knights flying on ostriches, and and it works. Like, it works so well. And you're fighting pterodactyls and other knights and all this other stuff. And I'm just like, this is so much fun, and the sounds of it and everything else. Like, so for me, like, Joust has the entire package because it's so different than anything else that was coming out at the time. It was space this, space that, everything space, 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 Galaxians, Space Invaders, Star Wars, all that other stuff.
And
then somebody comes out and says, you know what? We're going to do knights flying on ostriches.
They call it Joust.
And it's just like, okay, and it worked so well. So for me, that's my favorite game in this
Fantastic.
Space.
You have you read or listened to or read Ready Player One?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay,
yeah,
I was going to say Joust is kind of, I never really played a lot of Joust growing up, but I was exposed to it very heavily because it features very prominently in that game.
So yeah, lots of references to the games there.
What's yours?
So I have a couple. I'm torn.
No, you get one. You have to pick one. He had to pick one, so you have to pick one.
I will land on one, but I have a caveat.
Okay.
So when I entered this space and I took the tour, I had been at various arcades in San Diego and Indianapolis and Boston and Richmond. I've been around to various arcades in various cities. I have never experienced in person for the first time Star Castle or Tempest. And both of those are here. Mm-hmm. And to read about them on the internet is one thing, but to like see them in front of me, I am so excited to actually like play them and see what they're all about and experience them. So that had to be said. My absolute favorite game here that I've loved and adored is the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles arcade. Four players, side-scrolling. It's the one from 1989. I loved that game in the arcades. My brother and I would play it constantly. There's an NES port. It's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, the arcade game. I play it all the time. And just something about Ninja Turtles, I grew up on it. I love it. It's nostalgic. It's my life. I was born in 86. And so like it just hits. And so Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, that's my favorite.
You were talking Ninja Turtles the other day, weren't you, on Sunday?
Probably.
The movie. You're talking about
yes,
the movie.
Yes, I was. Yeah, yep. Mm-hmm. I was bringing up the movie.
That's
yep.
funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's your selling point right there. Like, and I think that just to elaborate on that, simply because you brought it up, the Star Citizen and Tempest. I mean, your comment Star Castle, I'm sorry. Star Citizen? What is Star Citizen?
That's a new game.
That's a new game. Yeah, I think I read something about it.
It's a ridiculously ambitious, unfinished, over-budget, like, game. Yeah.
The But the thing you said earlier, which I think bears repeating actually in recording, which is you can tell that the guys who are running this have a love for video games just because those two games exist.
Yep.
In this space. Mm-hmm. Like this, you know, you've never seen them before in any other barcade that you've been to across the country. That's not to say that they don't exist out there.
Sure.
But the fact that you actually took the time to acquire those games is, and went through the effort of acquiring them mm-hmm. says something about your passion for this. But my answer is what it's predictably going to be. I love Gauntlet. And
yes.
that was my bar. Yes. That was my bar of entry. I was like, when we were walking through the space, I was like, man, where's Gauntlet? Because I don't know if I can trust his taste if he doesn't have Gauntlet in here. And then you pointed out, you're like, Gauntlet. Oh, as I was walking past it, you're like, oh, there's Gauntlet. And I was like, oh. So, yeah. I will be spending the rest of my evening after we're done playing Gauntlet.
We experienced a barcade in Richmond, Virginia for your 30th birthday. And we went through and they have tokens. You buy a thing, you get a whole cup full of tokens, and you go through and play whatever. I got the most entertainment value per token from Gauntlet. We put in one token and played for an hour and a half.
Yeah,
four players.
It was fantastic.
And it was the most fun we had out of the 3 hours we were there. Like, that was an hour and a half of it. And it was by far the best experience.
It's funny, you both chose games that are multiplayer. And I think that speaks to something, which is the social aspect of games. And mm-hmm. really, like what you're saying, Gauntlet, if you're playing by yourself, you're not going to last very long. If you're right playing now with four people, like one quarter, and you're going a long ways on that thing because you can play together. Fun. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is very much the same way. You know, if you've got multiple people playing, you can get really far in the game versus by yourself. So they're meant to be played together, which to me is what an arcade is all about.
Yeah, and Konami like made a string of these multiplayer. The Simpsons. X-Men, Turtles in Time. If you can get that. Sorry, I'm going to put in a request right now. If you can get Turtles in Time, you'll blow my mind all over the wall. Like, I will be all about it.
So, all over the wall.
My mind will be all over the wall. Yes.
Awesome. The second DLC question is a little different. So we're getting away from just the design of the games themselves and which game is compelling for its own sake. And we're now looking more at the cabinets themselves. I want to look around the space and say, which do you think is the best looking cabinet, the best artwork, the coolest, you know, actual design layout of the buttons and joysticks and everything? And if you had to pick one based on those criteria, which do you think it would be?
Do I get to go first
again? You get to go first.
Of course.
You've spent more time in the space. You've spent intimate time with these. So.
Which means I'm going to take the very obvious one, which is Tron. So Tron, without a doubt, you've got a glowing joystick. You've got sort of this upper display, which isn't a monitor, but it actually has sort of a three-dimensional effect to it. As a cabinet, it looks nothing like anything else in the space. And I think for a game that had pretty awful gameplay, it is not an enjoyable game. And I'm pretty sure when it came out, it was actually 50 cents, not 25, and people would throw money at it because it's so beautiful to look at, and the movie had come out and everything, and people were sort of like, oh, this is a thing. So for a movie that was somewhat lackluster at a time and a gameplay that wasn't great, it earned so much money at the time, and I think it's because the cabinet is absolutely gorgeous.
Sweet. What do you think, Termite?
I am torn. I'm always torn. There's so much. I love video games so much. It's so hard. Like, it's choosing your best baby. I want to say the first time I saw this cabinet for the first time tonight, right now, and that's Tempest. Like, mm-hmm. I love the way that Tempest arcade looks. Look at that line of arcades, right?
Yeah.
The cabinet, they all kind of have this similar indented screen, but Tempest is flat, whereas everyone else has like a indented one, and I think that stands out. I do want to give a shout out to Punch-Out. It has two screens. And back in the day when arcades had like full-blown TVs in them that were super heavy, CRT monitors like embedded in them, like Punch-Out has two of them. So it's probably that much more expensive, I imagine. But having like Nintendo continued this trend with the DS portable console and then now the Wii U and the Switch with this whole idea of like TV versus handheld, the two-screen paradigm. And so I think Punch-Out looks great because of that, but Tempest is right now in this moment is my favorite looking arcade.
Yeah, I was gonna say it was disappointing because we had to turn it off, but my pick would be the Star Wars. We had to turn them all off because we didn't want to risk any ambient noise, but the one that triggered me that said, okay, no, we absolutely have to turn this off or else we're gonna get sued was the Star Wars Atari Atari Star Wars game over there. But the thing looks gorgeous. I mean, I walked past it and I was like, what is this? It took me a second to realize I was looking at a Star Wars console. But I mean, it's got a design that looks like something pulled right out of the movie. Like the console looks like the inside of a TIE fighter or something. Yeah.
And the controller mechanism.
Yeah,
on
it's got
it.
I mean, yoke.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
It's very, very cool and very creative. I want to say a runner up for me that wouldn't necessarily be my, again, I'm not going to say I'm torn, but I like what you have done with the Smash TV. And you had talked about it because you said you actually had to, it was sold to you in parts, and so you had to put it together.
Yeah, it was my first project.
But you mentioned that you were going to change the artwork on the side, and I think it looks beautiful the way it is.
Yeah.
So I'm throwing that out there as like I think I love the like shirtless ripped man with the gun and the helmet. Like,
oh, it's the same
awesome.
Artwork. It's just, you know.
Oh, okay.
It's cleaner. It's the same artwork. It's just that not peeling. And
so you're going to make it even more beautiful, awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree though. The side is the Smash TV because it's literally a guy smashing a TV with his foot, and he's got a gun. And he's got this like weird like headpiece. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, totally. And you've got a position in such a way where someone walks in and they look to the left and they're going to be like, or the right, and they're going to be like, that is a good looking man on a good looking machine there. I love it.
Yeah. And the front of it too, like the artwork on the front, they've got video cameras and stuff because the idea of course behind Smash TV is that you're on a live action television show where you are fighting for your life. I don't know if you knew that. Like, so it's based on Running Man, came out in the early 90s. And so like, you've got video cameras on the front and an announcer, and he's basically like, good luck, you'll need it. And all these people are trying to kill you and you're trying to kill them to win VCRs and other prizes. So it's so great.
It's great.
And they're just sort of like cash prizes, money the whole time. It is such a ridiculous game. It is so much fun.
That's awesome. I can't wait to play it.
Yep.
Well, cool. That I think then concludes our DLC.
Those are our rap horns.
That's our rap horns. Yeah. Like someone told us, it was very early on our show we started doing it, and we've always toyed with the idea of like, oh, maybe at some point we can get a soundboard, and we've been told, no, we love the voiced awkward rap horns.
Yes.
So that's our intro sound. All right, well, that's it. That's, it sounds like meows, like cats.
It's even better in person, like, I've got to say.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, then our main topic today, we are interviewing Tim here, and he is going to talk to us about not only opening up an arcade and not only running, you know, the business vision and ideas behind having to run an arcade, but also we'll talk about the fact that this is a very interesting year to be opening up a physical gaming space.
For sure.
And so we will definitely be bringing up the pandemic. I'm sure our listeners are sick of hearing about it, but we've been avoiding, we haven't been actively talking about it unless it's been relevant.
Right.
So we did a whole episode on it, but you know, so you can go back and hear more of our thoughts on how the industry has been impacted by COVID-19. We did an episode back in March on it.
Yep.
But this is specifically, we have the opportunity to talk to someone who has been affected by it, and so we wanted to take an opportunity to do that. And then of course, plug his arcade, because this is a great space and we want to share it not only with our listeners, but we want to come here.
Oh,
I know I'll be coming
here.
So when you guys open up and when this whole thing is behind, this whole mess is behind us.
Mm-hmm.
So we definitely want to give him as much of a boost as our little show is capable of. So without further ado, we'll jump right into it and we'll stop talking and let our wonderful guest talk. And we want to start with a question. We call this your elevator speech. And it's sort of a basic, like, who you are, you know, what do you do? What did you do before this? What kind of brought you to where you are now? And then also take an opportunity to talk about what your history with video games is, and what your favorite game is,
because nice.
Obviously we're a gaming show, so we want to hear about that. So
for
what
sure.
your passion is. So start with that.
So my name is Tim Owens, and I should give a plug as well for my co-founder, which is Jim Groom. He couldn't be here because he actually lives in Italy right now, and so couldn't make the flight back just for this. But
unfortunate.
Yeah.
It's like 1 in the morning.
Yeah,
2 in the morning.
It's somewhere around there. I didn't want to have to ask him to pull a late nighter for this one. But yeah, so we both have been working with a separate business called Reclaim Hosting, which is a web hosting company geared towards higher education. Jim and I know each other from back when we used to work at the University of Mary Washington. And so we have pretty deep roots in higher education, working with colleges and universities. And we were both working together there in technology with faculty members, helping them, you know, do interesting stuff in their classroom and things like that. And out of that university, we had played around with this project to give students web hosting. And it kind of took off. And at some point, I think Jim said, could we offer web hosting to other people? You know, like, you know, could we just offer it to anybody? And I was like, yeah, why not? So we spun up a server and tried it out. I wasn't much of a server administrator, and it blew up. It was just, you know, it had become very popular to the point where I had to leave Mary Washington because it was becoming a full-time job. Later, Jim left, and now we have 7 employees, and we work out of the space. Actually, 3 of them, I believe it's 3. Maybe more at this point. No, 3 came from Mary Washington as well.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so we try to, they're a feeder for us for employees. So Reclaim Hosting offers web hosting to universities and colleges and anybody that just kind of needs to have a website out there and doesn't want to use GoDaddy and kind of wants to be able to talk to somebody and that kind of thing. So
listeners.
So
anyone have a website out there?
Small little plug there.
We got a contact for you.
Yeah.
If 80-bit Podsmash wants to branch out and create some web space, see, we have an inlet.
Yeah. There you go.
That's a good thought.
You know, all the other podcasts are doing Squarespace. We could get a little something going here with Reclaim Hosting. So that was sort of, that's our day-to-day business. That's still very successful. It's here right in Fredericksburg. It's actually, our office space is right next door to the arcade. But we have sort of, I guess I would say, a penchant for doing silly and ridiculous things, particularly my co-founder. I think he would agree that typically he will throw out an idea and I say, that's absolutely insane. And then we end up doing it. And this space, in fact, was a co-working space. When I needed an office space, I said, you know, it's a lot of us are working remotely, but I really wanted a space to work from. And he was like, yeah, I think that's great. Get an office space. And so we took over this space, but we wanted it to be one that other people could work from. And he said, that's awesome. And we could also open a VHS store there too. And I kind of laughed it off. And then the freelance star came to interview us, and we're like, oh, this is going to be great. It's a co-working space. You know, people can come rent tables and stuff and do other things. He's like, and the VHS store. And I was like, oh, really? He's talking about the VHS store again. Like, that's not going to be a thing. And sure enough, about a year and a half ago, we were bouncing around ideas for how we might do marketing. Because we didn't want to do like webinars and like other BS stuff. We're just kind of like, that's kind of boring. That's not us. Just to give you an idea, like our hosting company is kind of marketed on the idea that we're an independent record label that's helping, you know, people sort of underground as a grassroots effort get their own websites online.
Sweet.
And so not corporate in that sense. And he was like, and so I said, well, if we had a VHS store, then we could create a VHS tape and mail it out to every university in the U.S. that they would have to play on a VCR that could be sort of like a little bit of an ad pitch. And he was like, that's brilliant. And so we did. So in order to do that, we created Reclaim Video, which was a video store in Fredericksburg, Virginia. It had 2,000 VHS tapes. We started collecting Laserdisc movies, Betamax, even something called Selectivision, which is super trippy. It's a video on vinyl.
What?
So, yes, it is actual. It's the worst format you will ever see. Because vinyl scratches, and then the movie is ruined, and so they put it in plastic cases. This was RCA, which, of course, made a bunch of record players, so they thought, this is the future of video. They failed. They failed.
But for obvious reasons.
It's an awful format, but we have players and movies here for it, because it's so much fun, too. So we started Reclaim Video, and that was sort of, you know, just a fun little side project. And we had also started buying video games in the space just to kind of have around. And every so often he would say, are we starting an arcade? And I'd be like, no. He'd be like, I don't know. Reclaim Arcade's got a little bit of a ring to it. And I'm like, not another one of his ideas, please. No, like, I'm done. I'm good. Like, we can just have a few games. And we had 12 arcade games in the space. And we finally said, let's build an arcade. The space next door to us became available. And we suddenly had 6,000 square feet to work with. And, you know, we decided to close down the co-working space. And we said, you know what? We can actually do this. So we did. I don't know if that covers it. I've been talking for
a
lot.
That covers it. Yeah, no, that's great.
That's the long and short history of how Jim and I came to know each other and started several other businesses and then kind of came around to starting this arcade thing.
Fantastic. Yeah. Well, speaking of arcades then, what's your history with video games? What got you into video games? Obviously, you know, you're opening an arcade, so you're passionate about games.
Sure.
What's your history with that?
Yeah, well, so I'm a little older than you all, but not by much. So I was born in 82. So I kind of missed that first wave, the traditional, the arcades that you would find in
not necessarily
malls, but actually like strips mall spaces and things like that, standalone arcade spaces. I missed all of that. So for me, my history with arcades is more like the mom and pop restaurants and stuff you might go into. I can remember going to Fuddruckers and they had a game room in the back, you know? And that kind of thing, or you would go into like whatever random Italian restaurant and they'd have a game room and you were like, I want to eat here for the rest of my life because they've got two games over there and I will never, you know, like you quickly shovel down your food so you can run over there with a handful of quarters. So that's my experience with arcade games. And then in terms of video games for consoles, it's more like the Nintendo, Super Nintendo and that kind of stuff. So I guess in terms of actual arcade games, for me, it's the Konami ones. It's the four player stuff. Sunset Riders, I don't know if you remember.
Oh,
the Cowboys.
You gotta
like,
get that.
Oh man, that for me was a great one. We would play that all the time.
Yeah.
In terms of, I don't even do a whole lot in the way of modern stuff, but for me, like a real turning point in gaming was Half-Life. So I became a huge Half-Life fan. I was an art major in college, and just for me, like that had a storytelling atmosphere that I never experienced before in gaming. Like I'd had fun playing games, but I had never gotten so embedded in a story. And I can remember Half-Life 2 came out while I was in college. We stayed up till 3 a.m. to download it, and I was just like enamored with it. I was like, this is insane.
Yeah.
You know, the way this is. So like for me, like I didn't get into the more hardcore first person shooters, but for me, Half-Life was so much more than just a shoot 'em up type game.
Yeah.
It wasn't just like Counter-Strike or whatever. It was something way bigger than that. So
awesome. Cool.
Yeah, we just went through like we're going through this Wikipedia list of greatest games of all time.
Sure.
And I've like elaborated and waxed eloquently about Half-Life and Half-Life 2 and how they're like groundbreaking for storytelling and shooters. And so to have someone else, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Thank you for
and
sharing that.
Well, and now they're doing the same thing with VR with Half-Life Alyx.
Yeah.
And so it's like the very same thing. I feel like Valve just suddenly, like, they're really groundbreaking all the time in new ways. I mean, they created Steam. It's just sort of like, can you just stop being like this, like, powerhouse of, like, creating new stuff and then it becomes mainstream to the point where it's like, oh, what was life without Steam? Like, I don't know. You know? And they're like, oh, yeah, it's just a side thing that we're doing to be able to distribute Half-Life. It's like, really?
If you had to boil all of your video game experience down, what is your one favorite video game?
Oh,
if
you're
could,
killing me.
One.
Yeah, killing it.
Yeah. Forever.
Well, I'm torn.
Yeah, right?
Nice.
Yep.
One video game.
Is there one that stands
That's
out in your
question
mind?
That's a question you wouldn't even ask yourself. Don't even.
Yeah, I've got an answer for that. We've done it on the show.
Really?
Yeah. Yes.
Like, of all the eras, all the different styles and genres.
Wait, what is it?
Final Fantasy VII.
Fantasy
on PlayStation
7.
1.
Okay.
Yep.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah,
touche.
It's my single favorite video game of all time.
Yeah. I think for me, it would have to be console. For sure, an early console, probably a Super Nintendo or a Nintendo game, just because that's how much time I put into those.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for the ones that I had access to, I would be locked into them. So it might actually be the original Mario or Mario 3, one of the two.
Oh,
just
solid.
Just in terms of the amount of time I played it and how hooked on it I was. I've never been big into like finding patterns, looking at cheat codes, like that level of gaming I've never been big into. And with those kind of games, like I played it enough to where I'd be like, and then you go under here and this is a glitch in the game and now you're going under the ground and if you grab the wings here you're flying across the sky and doing it. And it's just like, unlike any other game, I would just like, I would really get into those. And you know, you grab the whistle here and now you're going on to level 8 and do that, and then you play it again and again so many different times. And
I think
that's it for me.
We have a series that we call Everything Franchises, where we talk about a single franchise and just go, you know, deep into all the history and all of the things that we love about it. And we did one on Mario, and I think both of our answers was Mario 3, about
Mario
our favorite Mario game.
Yeah,
yeah, our favorite Mario game, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's classic.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. You know, usually we get answers that are kind of in that. I mean, usually when we've done this and done interviews, the answer is Ocarina of Time. Like, so many people have given us that answer. And then we have one person give us Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah.
So it's so fascinating to see someone give an, to hear someone give an answer that's pre 97, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
So cool. Well, you sort of talked a little bit about kind of what brought you to opening an arcade specifically.
Sure.
And but could you elaborate a little bit more on what your inspiration specifically for an arcade was? I mean, obviously you have a lot of history with classic and retro games and arcades, and so does your business partner. but kind of what specifically made you think, I want to open and even more elaborate, not just an arcade, but a barcade, you know, where sure. you want to serve drinks too. So yeah. what kind of brought you to that specific, this is something we want to do, this is something that we're going to invest time, effort, and money into doing?
No, for sure. I mean, it's definitely something that has become trendy. So we sure. had started visiting a few arcade bars. You know, interesting fact, barcade is a trademark term. If you use it, you will get a takedown notice. I've gotten one already for accidentally using the hashtag in a single Instagram post.
Yeesh.
And
we'll
within 24
it.
Hours, they took it down.
It's
so,
in Brooklyn.
But, okay, yeah, sorry, correction then. Legal correction. He is not opening a bar.
I'm not opening
he
a
is
bar.
He is opening an arcade bar.
Yeah, yep. Right. But, you know, so these have become very popular. And so we had visited a few. We kind of knew what that model was. And for us, it was kind of like, it's fine. You know, it's enjoyable for sure, especially for me. I love playing the games. I love craft beer, and that had become a very popular thing. But for us, we felt like we could do something really different here. And part of that, I think, does go back to that idea of, you know, here we are over here creating a VHS store. We have a passion for the real, like, classic games, not necessarily putting, you know, I know you're a huge DDR fan, but not right. putting in DDR mm-hmm. or hoop basketball or skee ball mm-hmm. machines or redemption games, God forbid. So, like, for us, we really felt like we could do something that was a little bit more traditional, but still do it in a way that's modern and contemporary as well. So retro modern, right? And so for me, I think Jim would probably be happy with just an arcade. I was kind of like, no, you know, he doesn't drink. I love the craft beer. So I'm kind of like, I kind of want a little bit of both there for sure.
You're in Italy. I'm here. We're right. going to drink.
Yeah, no. for sure. But then we started thinking of other elements. So one good example of this is that while Jim was still at Mary Washington, he created something called the Console Living Room, which was a corner of this technology convergence center. It was like this beautiful space, glass, screens on the wall, like the super modern space. He took a corner of it and he put up wood paneling and old school TVs and Atari and an old couch. He put up movie posters, and suddenly you were transformed to your parents' living room from the mm-hmm. 80s. And suddenly you were like, wow, this is insane. It was like a museum exhibit, but it was a living one that people could sit down and play the games. It was meant to be physically touched and interacted with. And we said, we can put that in the arcade.
Yes.
And nobody's doing that.
Yes.
Like, no arcade you go to is doing that. And we were like, the lounge space will be an 80s living room that you can actually interact with. And people will, I think, kind of connect with that in a way that, you know, is really different.
Especially after, I mean, that was an element. Just to bring it up again, that was an element in Ready Player One.
Sure.
You know, and we talked, that's, like, they were able to visit that in a virtual space. But
you
can come here to Fredericksburg to this bar arcade, and you can come to this living room right now. We've seen it. We've actually already experienced that to some level. And that's something. You're right. No one else is doing that.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So for us, it's as much. You know, games are fun for sure, but we want to create spaces for people to commune and enjoy and interact with. It's a living museum. I mean, these things are historical pieces. These games are 40 years old, you know, but the last thing I want to do is say, look at those amazing things over there behind glass that nobody can, you know, use. Like, the best thing that we can do for these vintage artifacts, I think, is to make sure that they're maintained and still work and that people can play them. And so for me, it's that way with movies and with video and everything else. And so what we're trying to do here is really create a space that harkens back to the 80s in a way that people can connect with and interact with that I think will be special and will be something that they haven't seen before.
Nice.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you're talking about some challenges. And so that leads us to our next question. Now, granted, this year has been a challenge for everyone, but we'll get to that. We'll get to that. We'll get to 2020 here. You've obviously been working on this business for a while, and you had no way of foreseeing that. So before the pandemic, what were some of the challenges that you faced in that pre-COVID era to opening the space?
Yeah. So I mentioned that these games are 40 years old. They break. They break so often.
You can't so physical.
Oh my gosh, yes. Yeah. And in part that's good because digital is harder to fix than the physical sometimes. You know, digital, something breaks, you're maybe downloading a patch, you're hoping you didn't brick something. With the physical, you can fix it, but I don't have a Radio Shack next to me, and I certainly don't have the guys that used to work at Radio Shack. Yeah. And so owning these games requires you to start to learn how to fix them. I needed to learn. I knew some basic soldering skills, but I had to learn how to read a schematic. I had to learn, you know, what a JAMA adapter is, and, you know, like all these various aspects of the games, because I had to be able to fix them myself. There, it's not like I can just call up my neighborhood arcade repair person and right. he'll know how to fix a Tempest. You know, like he'd probably look at me and go, we don't do those anymore, right? Nobody right. does. Yeah. And so that has been probably the biggest challenge. I would say we have somewhere around the neighborhood of 45 games in the space, and then another 6 pinball machines, which are, if you can even believe it, even more finicky than the arcade games because they're so physical as well.
Oh, yeah.
And I would say at any given time, 4 or 5 of them are having issues of some kind. And so it has been a big challenge to try and get them buttoned up. I'm not of a mindset, if a monitor is broken, to put an LCD screen in there. I want them to look the way that they looked back then, and that requires...
I love it. That, I love it so much.
But that requires then finding monitors that don't exist anymore. Right. You have to harvest them from other games or from TVs and, mm-hmm. you know, find them, you know, from other people who are selling them and people who are able to repair them. And so it's a lot more work to keep them traditional. I think it's important, but at the same time, that's the big challenge for sure.
Sure.
Yeah.
And to elaborate on that, this is a question I didn't write down, but I thought about later.
Yeah.
What do you anticipate being the situation when you open up and you have people drinking in a space and, you know, there's always the potential, how are you going to handle, you know, people drinking, potentially spilling drinks on the games? What do you kind of expect the maintenance situation to look like? Are you going to do that all yourself? Are you going to contract that out? What does that look like when you actually open up and are dealing with people messing with your stuff?
Yeah, it'll be a mix. So I've got a workshop in the back of the space that, you know, allows me, it's got a workbench area. I can do the soldering and things like that. I can roll a game back there and put it out of sight and actually work on it. So I will be able to do some work on there. I think part of that too is about just making sure people have places to put their drinks. They don't want to spill drinks on games either. But if you don't put cup holders anywhere or you don't put tables and things in strategic places, then they're going to set it on top of the gainer. They're going to set it on the floor and then it's going to spill or whatever the case may be. So I think a lot of that you can prepare for in advance. And I'm also of the mindset that I don't really enjoy playing what if games of like, you know, we shouldn't do any of this because there's danger, right? Like at the end of the day, those kind of things can be repaired. If somebody spills a drink, you just clean up the spill, you make sure that it's clean. If you have to then do some repairs on the games, you do them and then you can move on. You know, these things have old cigarette burns from when arcades you could still smoke in, and people would actually, to, you know, set their cigarette down on the control panel while they were playing and it would burn right into the control panel. And so there's a lot of history in the games already. And so I'm a little bit okay, you know, with small things here and there. We will probably contract out some other stuff just to save my sanity in that same regard. I'm only one person, and especially, you know, given all the other aspects of what it means to run an arcade, I probably won't want to make that my full-time job as well as repairing all of the games. And so we'll probably get some help in that regard. But at the same time, I do think it's manageable, and I think it's important too.
Cool. To elaborate a little bit on that, do you find yourself wanting to modify the cabinets? Because you have this like passion for preserving the original experience.
Sure.
Would you want to modify the cabinets to attach a cup holder to it?
So that's a great question, because we actually went back and forth on it. I hate the idea of screwing cup holders into games.
Yep.
Like it would actually hurt me, I think, to drive a screw into a game like that. I've seen a couple different places that do sort of standalone cup holders on like they use like metalwork and stuff. So you can pick them up and move them different places, which I think is one nice model. You can build really narrow tables that you put between the games every so often. And then you just put out tables like in the center space over here, and then we're going to have some barrels down the middle here. And so if somebody can set down a drink and then walk over to a game, that works as well too. And so I'm more of the mindset of making sure there are spaces to set a drink down that isn't on the game itself, as opposed to having to drill plastic cup holders into the old games, which I really just wouldn't want to do.
Sweet. Sure.
I mean, and the space is laid out very smartly, not only to allow you to do that, but also to allow you to yourself and your staff to keep an eye on.
Right.
You know, everything's open. There's no corners or hidden spots.
Totally.
People will be able to keep an eye on, you know, your staff will be able to keep an eye on your employees, not necessarily as in a, but just looking out for them, making sure that they've got what they need.
Yeah.
And then furthermore, Yeah, they can look out for each other and stuff like that too.
Pinball's a little bit easier because the legs have leg bolts in them, and so they make actually cup holders that just tap right into the leg bolts that are already in there, and so it's very easy to put a cup holder on a pinball machine. It's just there's nothing like that on an arcade game. So we'll think through other options there for sure.
All right, sweet. So what is your vision for the business then? Again, this is kind of like maybe pre-pandemic, but like. You set this thing up. What is your vision for the business? How is Reclaim different? And why should our listeners be excited about this place specifically versus other arcades?
Sure. Yeah. And so I've talked a little bit about it. So we are going to recreate the VHS store. That's actually going to be the lobby and the entrance to the space. That's where people will come in. That's where they will, you know, pay for their entrance to the space. We'll probably even have candy there, but it'll be, you know, videos on the walls, Laserdisc and those kind of things. And that will sort of be their first experience of this is different, right? Like, last time I remember this was a Blockbuster in the 90s or something. And so you're walking in there and you suddenly realize it's different. The next space they walk into is the 80s living room that they're passing through to come into the arcade. So they're hitting all of those various different, you know, living exhibits even before they've come into the arcade to actually play the games. And so for us, it's very much about that. And then they come into here. You know, for us, we just want to provide a fun place for people to hang out, play games. We will have a bar. You know, we will probably change the way we handle things, and we can get into some of that post-pandemic and that kind of stuff. But our vision for the space is that, you know, that we have a large number of traditional games as well as a handful of modern ones, especially on the pinball side. Probably not so much on the arcade side, but, you know, Stranger Things pinball is, you know, less than a year old. It came out in December of last year. And so, you know, we're not necessarily tied to it's got to be pre-1985, for example, or something of that nature. We definitely lean towards the 80s for our games, or early 90s in the case of some of these Konami, you know, four-player games and stuff like that. But at the same time, you know, we're not complete purists, but we are fairly much in that sense. And we just really want to create a fun space for people to really transport them back to their childhood. I think that actually really defines what we're trying to do in this space. And it's nostalgic. It's a little bit self-serving, you know, but at the same time, I think that a lot of people are looking for that right now. I think I mentioned Stranger Things. Stranger Things is centered all around the 80s, right?
Yep.
You couldn't find a better time than right now where people are interested in the idea of retro. You know, everybody went crazy when Captain Marvel dropped down into the Blockbuster, and you got all those references to Centipede and all those other games in there. All these retro consoles are coming out now, and, you know, people are really interested in recreating their childhood in different ways. I think we can do it with the actual items from their childhood, which I think is really special.
And we talked too on our podcast how archival is important because, you know, now that video games, you know, the movement is to be recognized as a legitimate art form. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you would absolutely, we did our very first episode talking about, do video games count as art? Are they art? And I would imagine you would agree with that.
Of course.
Just the artistry. I mean, just looking around this room, the artistry, not just in the aesthetics, but just in the design of these cabinets, of these games, is incredible. Mm-hmm. And preserving that in its original form as much as possible, because we're, you know, technology is advancing, the world is advancing, these things are starting to, you know, they need to be preserved, they need to be treated as such. So the fact that you're making an effort to do that is not only laudable, but also I think there's definitely a demand for it. So.
Yeah, and accessible to the public and not behind glass.
Like, right.
We can come in and actually play these games. We share the exact same passion that you have with arcades. I love coming here to consume that, but you're the owner of this stuff. I have a wall of classic consoles in my house, and I make sure I have an old TV and everything's hooked up the way it was when you bought it. So I have a Nintendo, a Super Nintendo, I have a 3DO, a Sega Saturn, a Sega Dreamcast, and the list goes on. I have a ton of consoles, but I want to make sure I have all the original hookups, all the original TVs, and my dream is to not preserve this stuff to keep its monetary value, but to make it accessible and playable to anyone who wants to come into my house and play games.
For sure.
And so I want this to be some sort of, like, maybe it's the workings of something bigger later in my life, but right now it is a room in my house that is just filled with lots of video games. Lots of video games.
And let's be real, this stuff is all the inspiration for what we consume today. And yes. So it's important to remember it and know it and understand like where we've come from. Same way with video and everything else, where it's easy to forget, like nothing is new. It's all like recreations and built on inspiration from the past. And so to be able to actually understand and go, I remember that because of something that I just saw a couple weeks ago. It's like, wow, that's pretty cool, right? Yeah. Like to understand that path that people go through, to understand, okay, that director's doing that because of these old movies. This game game studio is doing this because they're building on previous work of all these other great designers all the way back to the 80s and even earlier. I think it's just really fascinating.
Yeah, so even if you didn't grow up in the 80s, even if you didn't grow up going to arcades, there's still a motivation for, you know, Gen Z. You know, these kids who are in high school who, you know, are playing Fortnite and loving it, like, come to this space and have a chance to see the roots, what brought us to Fortnite, what us to Minecraft. You can see the inspiration just walking through this space and playing, getting your hands on these games. So it's very important work. I think it's awesome.
And none of them are online.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. None of them. There's no Ethernet connections to any of them. It's great. So, all right, cool. So, with the rest of the 30 minutes that we have, you know, obviously we wanted to give a good amount of time to talking about what you're trying to do here, what you have done here, but we are in the present. We are in 2020. Reality has set upon us. So let's roll the clocks back to March.
Yeah.
Let's roll the clocks back to March 2020.
How many years ago was that?
Right? Yeah.
Right?
And let's talk about COVID now. When did the implications of the virus first become real to you? You know, about to open, you know, because we heard about this. When did we hear about this? Last year?
Whenever you first had the blast of Facebook is when I first saw it. It could have been last year.
Announced in late October.
Okay. There you go. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So late October.
I thought spring of 2020 is so far away. Yeah. I'm like, I want to play this now.
Yeah.
Yeah. When did it become real for you as in like, oh, this is going to impact our plans?
Yeah. So, yeah, we announced that we were creating Reclaim Arcade last year. I had started working on it nonstop. Jim took over a lot of the hosting side so I could focus solely on the arcade. It was my life for the first 3 months of this year. And even last year, I was handling everything. We were going through hiring processes for the manager. We had actually hired somebody. I had been working with a ton of vendors and everything. And then I know that Jim saw things happening before I did because he lived in Italy.
Yeah.
And Italy was really badly affected before the U.S. And I can remember, and my memory is a little bit hazy because I had so much going on. And I also think I was in denial. I truly do. You know, and he said, I can remember him saying, I think this is a big deal. My kids are out of school right now and there's no sign they're going back. And I was like, well, that's weird. That sucks, man. You know, but I had no sense of that was coming to the U.S. I thought this is something they're going through. This is something that happened in China and now it's happening in Italy. I had no sense that it would come to the U.S. So even as early, or as late, I guess better would to say, would be as mid-March. It was, I think, like March 11th or so. We had hired a general manager. I was working with the contractors, and I can actually remember having a meeting with them on, they had told me earlier that week, I think it was March 11th or 12th, that we weren't going to make the May deadline. So we weren't technically going to be spring 2020.
Yeah.
Because we were just out of time, and that wasn't even pandemic related. That was just they had to do a lot more construction to the space. We hadn't gotten permits. We weren't done, and I had been working so hard, and I was so mad. I was like, "What do you mean we're not going to be open by May?" I was like, "This is frustrating." And I can remember Jim and even other people I would talk to go, "Well, you know." Maybe that's not so much a bad thing.
Blessing in disguise.
Oh, and I was just sort of just like, shut up. Like I was just kind of like, okay, I have no idea, like, whatever you're talking about. And so I kept pushing on the contractors. We met that Friday morning, and I can remember Jim asked him, is the pandemic causing issues for you? And he said, well, yeah, actually, because, you know, now the schools are closing, that's going to affect the ability for my workers to do work. It was still kind of vague at that point. It was like, well, this is kind of a pain, right? Like, this is something that we've got to work through. But then I was getting ready. This is very ironic. I was getting ready to go on vacation. I was going to Jamaica for a week. I was leaving that Saturday. And every day of that week, I can remember more and more bad news kept coming out. And I kept thinking, just let me get to Jamaica. I wasn't even thinking about the arcade. I was like,
yes.
I have spent a lot of money to go to Jamaica, and I don't want to cancel this vacation. Just let me get to Jamaica. And like I said, we had hired a general manager earlier that week, and you know, then the contractors were saying things weren't going to work. By Friday, I'm telling my employees to go home and not come back because we're closing the office space. And then while I'm in Jamaica, I'm having to fire the person that I hired
because it
became very clear that the arcade was not going to be open anytime soon, and there was just no way that we could in good conscience actually bring her on, and she was supposed to start when I got back from Jamaica. And I said, we can't do it. And we put everything on pause at that point. By the time I got back a week later, this was like the third week of March, it became clear that nothing was happening, that this state, because I can remember Jim said to me, He was sort of like, I kept joking with him and saying, like, you're my, like, fortune teller. Like, you're telling the future for me because everything happened in Italy first and then to us.
Yep.
And, you know, his kids would be out of school and then all our school systems closed. And then he said, well, just wait until all the bars and theaters and everything close. And I would say,
what?
That's not going to happen. That's literally never happened. Ever. Like, I mean, we have never as a community shut down all of our like restaurants and theaters and everything else. And 2 weeks later they did. And I said, so what else is happening in the future, Jim?
Like, tell me,
I'm
Oracle.
Listening now. And I mean, yeah, he was just sort of like, you know, there's cars driving around blaring that you can't come out of your house. Like they were in full lockdown quarantine. And then we got there as well, although we arguably didn't last quite as long. And then things started opening back up. But yeah, it at that point we just said, okay, clearly we're not doing anything right now. Mm-hmm. We just put everything on pause and we just said, let's just wait it out. And in some ways, you know, it was a blessing in disguise. You know, I wasn't ready to accept that at the time because, you know, I was so mad.
Right.
I was imagine. Just sort of, oh, yeah. I was just sort of just like, no, this wasn't like good news. Like,
right. Yeah.
But we were about to sign off on $250,000 of construction.
Yeah.
And we had not signed those papers yet. If this had happened a month later, I had already had staff hired and I would have had to fire all of them or send them home, or they would all be on unemployment and be struggling, or we'd be like one of many other businesses right now trying to be up and running and surviving and really struggling. And instead, we're in a position where we can just wait this out. That's huge. I mean, that's something that, you know, we couldn't have prepared for by any means, but at the same time, I'm glad that we have now. So, you know, we've been on pause, and, you know, I've joked with people that for a while there, I was kind of divorced to everything. I was kind of like, I can't even think about the arcade because I was so close to it and then it was taken from me. And just in the last like month or so, I had packed up the entire space and moved it next door into a small room. So this space was completely empty because there was going to be construction.
Yeah, yeah.
So before I went to Jamaica, I was like, I've got to get everything out of here so I can go to Jamaica and they can start construction.
Yeah.
Construction never happened. And I finally came around to, let's just move all the games back into the space. We've got a great space anyway. We don't need to do the master grand plan. We can do a good version of it with what we have right now. And so I started moving the games back into the space, setting them up. And with each game and changing out the light bulbs for colored bulbs and really starting to piece out things, I said, I really came around to the idea like, okay, this can be an arcade, but it doesn't matter when it opens. Like,
sure.
I want to get open. I want more people to experience this, but I want to do it in a way that's safe. And so, you know, we'll get there eventually, but it's much less of a burden now because I don't have like looming deadlines, spring 2020. And then it was coming and then I was missing it and I was pissed off. And like all of a sudden it's just sort of like, you know, when we're ready, you know, when the world is ready, we'll be ready. And so, like, we can do it on our own time, which is nice.
Cool. So, elephant in the room then.
Yeah.
What's the plan?
Yeah.
What's the opening plan right now? Or tentative opening plan, obviously.
So, we've talked.
Flexibility.
We have some more work to do with the VHS store in the living room, for sure. We need to build a bar. So, that's one big open thing happening right now is us figuring that piece out. In Virginia, in order to sell alcohol, you have to serve food, and there's no kitchen here. And so we've got to figure out how to do that in a way that doesn't break the bank. So there are small things like that. We've talked about the potential for running private parties here. You know, if you have a family member that's having a birthday and you're comfortable having a group of people come and rent out the entire space, maybe we could do something like that, for example. We've talked about that, but I think it's pretty clear that for us, we feel like it's probably going to be spring 2021. So, and a lot of that relies on a lot of things, you know? I mean, I think until we have a vaccine, nothing's going to matter. May be personal opinion, but I think it's just realistic.
At
the end of the day, until we have a way for people to know that they're safe, they're not going to go out in the same way that they did before. And you can do it haphazard. We don't want to do it that way. We're in a really good position right now to not lose tons of money trying to stay open. We've got a separate business and we can kind of just build out the space on our own time and be open at a time when everybody can truly enjoy the space. You know, there will still be changes, and we can talk about what some of those changes might look like next year, you know, post-pandemic. But I want to believe that if we can, you know, hopefully get a vaccine either late this year or early next year, that by sometime in the spring of 2021, that we could actually open to the public in the way that we want to.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah. Barring a vaccine, because that's a big question mark.
Sure.
And saying, for example, saying that you're committing to the spring 2021 opening, what other measures do you think you'd be comfortable with that would mitigate the effects? You know, you talked a little bit about private parties and how, you know, obviously that would be a way to generate revenue in a way that's kind of safe, mitigating large gatherings. Yeah. But aside from that, say you do open to the public, what are some things that you think that you would be comfortable with mitigating those effects while still being able to, you know, what does the middle ground look like, for example?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think capacity is huge. I think the number of people in the space always plays a role. I think we would look at our HVAC systems really hard and make sure that we've got air flowing outwards and inwards in ways that are safe and effective. Obviously, cleaning down surfaces is a big deal, but a lot of the newer information is talking about the fact that the virus doesn't live very long on surfaces. It's breathable. And so it's really about making sure that you're not standing 2 feet away from someone next to you who's talking right into your face.
We looked at each other.
Right. So, you know, so I and a lot of that guidance is evolving, but I think we're seeing with a lot of different businesses the way that they're affected by it. And I think it would be very similar here. We would be wiping down surfaces much more regularly than we even thought about. We've even thought about, you know, so like the original plan was to do self-pour taps. And so you would get a card, you would start a tab, and then you would go up and pour your own beer. And we had the entire system for it. And it's just not a safe thing to do because who knows who grabbed that handle before you and all that. And plus it's a huge expense. And so I think to start, we'll probably just do cans and bottles. And so like, that's one way where like, originally I was like, that's lame, you know, cans and bottles, like that's okay, but it's nothing spectacular. And now it's like, pretty good idea. Like, it's not so bad whatsoever.
Your staff can wear gloves and masks. Yeah. And crack it open, hand it open, and there's
I tell
no
you,
exposure.
Like the whole idea of like to go, like before I was kind of like, you know, like I'm going to order stuff from a restaurant to go, or I'm going to grab a beer by a can or something like that. And now it's like, so like, that's how I think where like people's consumption is changing dramatically, where I think people are more comfortable with single service items. I mean, it felt like, wasn't a year ago, it was just like nobody wanted to use straws whatsoever. Right. And now it's like, don't you dare show me a reusable cup. Like, more like they're like, no. Like, you can't reuse anything whatsoever. It needs to be single serve plastic. And so, like, people's, you know, way that they're consuming things are changing quite a bit. And I think we'll have to adapt to that. But I think we can do it in ways that are safe. It will dramatically, I think, change maybe our expectation for what numbers would have been. But I think that's where we're also in a good situation, because this was never meant to be something that was going to be this massive money-making endeavor. You know, for Jim and I, we have a separate business. We have other things. For this, it's a passion project. And so as long as it's not losing money, we're in a really good position. And so I think in that way, it really, if I'm honest with myself, it was a true blessing, because we would have lost tons of money if we had gone with the original vision. now during a pandemic. And now we're able to redefine that for what it means right now. And then if things start to, you know, we open up in the spring and then by summer, by fall, we've got a vaccine. And a year from then, things are like starting to get back to whatever it means to be some sense of normal. Then we can do a phase two and we can do more construction and we can kind of evolve as things change. But I think this just allows us even more so, I think, to create a space that really has our own heart in it, where we are right now. It really allows us to pour ourselves into it as opposed to just saying, well, the design company says if we were to break through this wall and do this massive thing and have a great bar over here and all this, that those kinds of things are uncomfortable to me because I've never run a restaurant. I've never run a bar in that sense. And so I think trying to do it more on the community level is what do we need to do to get open and have sort of a grassroots effort to create a space that people want to come to and just make it sort of this watering hole for the area that people love to enjoy and come and play games and hang out. And if you can do that safely, I think you're winning.
Cool.
There's a similar philosophy with podcasting, Twitch streaming, or YouTube creators.
Sure.
That you just get out there and make your content.
Yeah.
It's you they want. It's the content they want. It's not necessarily the fact that you have all the software and the bits and the tipping and the streaming or all the like Streamlabs, all the crazy quality camera and lights. Yeah. It's just get out there and make the content. And I feel like you have the physical version. Like those are digital things, right?
Yeah.
This is the physical space that's the same, embodying the same kind of aspect. Is
yeah.
This is your passion. We're here with the quality of what you want. It, I think there's a lot of potential here to make money. You're talking about like breaking even is kind of acceptable and it's okay as long as you're not bleeding money. But that mentality that you have is like, this is a side passion project. We're authentic. We're genuine. We're here. I think there's a lot of potential here to build this into something more, and like a phase two and a phase three and a phase four. This could, I mean, like, I'm going to get crazy, like be the East Coast, like place to go, you know, like on 95, which is our giant interstate that runs from New York to Miami. I mean, sorry, Maine to Miami, which is all Florida, right? Yeah. Like there could be signs posted on the internet, like go to Fredericksburg. This is the arcade to be.
Yeah.
Like that's the kind of like vision that I would see. If there was a place like that, I would guess and I would place a bet that they started as a passion project that didn't expect to make any money. And here they are, like the mecca of arcades on the East Coast.
And I think
mecca of arcades. Right. Putting some pressure there. But, to
you know, I'm just saying. Like, there's
lifetime membership right there. No, and I think your examples are really interesting, too, because when I think of YouTube and Twitch, I think of it as lowering the barrier to entry. And so I think, like, in that same way, that's what we can do here is, like, this space can be a testament to getting open in a way that didn't require, you know, a $500,000 loan and, you know, like, a massive construction effort and designing agencies and all this other fancy stuff. It was really the hearts of two guys that were just trying to pour themselves into the space. I mean, you know, and you do that stuff cheap, but you can still do it well. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, I've got these games hooked up to Alexa. I can turn them on with my phone. I've been buying these light bulbs that I can change with a remote that are like $5 a piece, as opposed to signing off on something and not even knowing how much the lighting costs because it's just a line item in somebody's PO, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and so it's a very different mentality. But I think that's a mentality that has a lot more heart behind it, which I think is really important.
It's not a super unfounded claim. There's a documentary that's out there on Amazon about old school retro video game stores that sell like old consoles and things. And every single one of them that do really, really well that are actually nationally known started the same way that Tim is starting this place here. That's kind of the analogy along with the digital space. So I wasn't
giving you a hard time.
I'm not a prophet. I'm not like, you know, this place has the ability to do that. And I think it's the mindset that I'm praising here is like, that is where it starts. Every successful place starts that way.
You got to be patient for your community.
Yeah.
You've got to be willing to open up and say, we believe that there's something here. We want you to come and see it. We want you to tell your friends and build something over time, as opposed to making this big splash and saying, grand opening and everybody's here and it's this massive thing right out the gate.
Right.
No, like, you know, anything that's successful takes time to build.
Yep.
And I think we've got the time to do that, which
fantastic.
Is really awesome.
Yeah, it's really, really awesome.
Yeah. So putting yourself in, let's go back to COVID a little bit and let's go back to the effects.
Sure.
And not, you don't have to spend too much time here, but kind of put yourself in the shoes of the customer and their experience. How do you think that their experience will be different, maybe again from the what you envisioned, you know, back in October.
Sure.
You know, what do you think that the experience is going to be like for the gamers or the customers, however you want to perceive them, as they come into the space and you know, now have to deal with what they've been dealing with.
Sure.
but in this space, the gaming experience, how do you think that's going to change now?
So I think what's going to change is obviously, you know, I think people can see businesses that take it seriously, and I think it's really important to take it seriously.
Absolutely.
You know, and so people are looking for information about that. You know, are you requiring masks? How many people are allowed in the building at one time? Are you monitoring that, right? Like, it's not just like, I went to a bar the other day and, you know, they had specifically said, and they had signs on the door, like, masks required. I walk in, no one's got them on, but no one's saying anything about it. Mm-hmm. And so I think, like, people are taking note of that. And, you know, while there is certainly a population that's comfortable with that, I'm not comfortable with that. And so, like, for us, like, we want to follow really clear guidelines and just be very honest with people about why we're doing it and how we're doing it. So I think it's things like making sure that everybody's wearing a mask, that we're not putting too many people in the space, making sure that people are adhering to those guidelines, and that we're lucky because we've got a lot of space. We have a lot of games, and normally, like, mm-hmm. the capacity of space would be really large. But I think we would dial that down significantly in light of this. You know, it might be just 20 to 25 people in the space at any given time, you know. And so I think those are the kind of things that I would change dramatically right out the gate. Are employees cleaning down things? But really, are they holding people to the same standards that they say they are? Because I know, like, when I go to a business, that's what I care about the most, is that what you said you're abiding by, you're actually doing. And I respect people more when they actually do that.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. All right, well, with the last little bit of time here, I had a question here. What advice would you give to other people either aspiring to open a business, again, a physical gaming, whether it be a physical gaming space or any physical business, quite frankly, or people struggling right now to either run or open their small businesses? Is there any advice that, you know, your experience you could kind of share and pass on, you know, in this time?
It's been really sad watching on Facebook and some other places, especially with the arcades were really badly hit here. You know, restaurants, they were able to have to-go options. Arcades didn't have that. Theaters didn't have that. The entertainment industry is struggling so hard right now. You know, everything from actual theaters for where people, you know, like the stage theaters to the movie theaters to arcades. The entertainment industry is going to struggle, and I think it's going to change dramatically as a result of that. I think we're seeing that with streaming options and stuff like that. And it's been really sad to watch some of those arcades start to put up the GoFundMe, start to reach out to people and go, guys, we're not going to make it. There's a place called Decades down in Charlottesville that has started selling off their games just to try and stay afloat, you know. And luckily with some of the bigger ones, they can sell a few games to try and make ends meet, but you hate to see it, right? And so, like, you're watching this happening in real time. I think my advice to anybody, you know, in the midst of this, but really just in general, is to just harness your community, like, tap into the power of that. And so, like, for me, what that looked like for Reclaim Arcade was getting on Facebook many, many months before we had anything really to show other than an image here and there. Like, it you know, some could say it was teasing, but for me, it was understanding what people want to see. I would throw out, like, hey, we're going to have this game, and people would go, oh, that's amazing, and be like, okay, they're into it. And I would throw Tempest up there, and they'd be like, yes. Oh my God, they have Tempest, and be like, you're my people, and I want you to keep following us and doing that. And so I've been trying to build that community even while we can't be open. It'll be even more important once we already are open. And so I think that's huge, because you can survive anything. You know, I have several businesses that I used to frequent regularly, and I've been doing my darnest to make sure that, you know, I buy takeout from them, that I buy my beer to go from them, that I patronize them, because I want them to survive this.
Yep.
And I think if you can get, it doesn't have to be a massive number of people when you've got people that are dedicated like that. So you find your community and you invest in them, and they'll invest in you. And I think that's the best thing that you can do, pandemic or not.
Yep, absolutely.
And one of the things that you did that I thought was really smart was you did a Twitch stream of your pinball at Brick and Morty.
Yeah.
And I didn't catch it live, but I definitely went back and watched it afterward. And I thought it was fantastic.
Like,
what a way to engage your community when they can't be here physically, but they can be here digitally.
Yeah.
And they can interact with you, answer questions, and, like, you can still continue to do what you did when you revealed a new arcade on Facebook. You can now do that on Twitch, interacting live. And I think you should make that, like, a thing, like that'd be awesome. I know I would be in tune with that.
Yeah, so and once idea. We're open, we'll have, you know, high score challenges. We'll start pitting people against each other. You know, like everybody loves that kind of stuff, tournaments and things like that. But my real goal is to really tap into the people that this space speaks to and say, you know, come be a part of it, you know, in a way that I think is really powerful. And then you can survive through anything.
Awesome. Cool. Is there any final thoughts you have, anything you'd want to communicate to our listeners? Again, knowing that many of our listeners are people our age, you know, I mean, even just us, the 12 of you that are listening out there.
That's a running joke.
Many of them are Virginians, you know, we're still kind of small. So what would you, anything else you want to communicate either about this space, about your business, about your passions, just any final thoughts that you may want to throw out there?
I guess I'd throw a question back out to your listeners, which is what would it make for you to feel comfortable to be in a space like this? You know, like the entertainment industry is changing, and I don't want to come to the space in a way where it's just like, well, you've got to understand the wonder of these retro games. And that kind of, we believe that we're building a great space, but I'm interested to know, like, for people that this speaks to, what would it take for them to feel comfortable in it? And for some people, maybe that's, I don't care, open right now. Like, you know, legally you're allowed to. I've heard that plenty of times from folks. Yeah. Legally, you're allowed to, and it's just like, that's great. Can you sleep at night? Who knows? But legally, I'm allowed to. So I'm interested to hear from people about, like, for them, what are their lines? What are the things they're looking at? The same kind of things that you ask of me, I would ask to everybody and just say, like, what kind of stuff are you interested to see in a space like this? And maybe we can't tackle all of it. That's fine. But at the same time, we want to build a space that serves the community and something that people are interested in. Otherwise, what are you doing? So yeah, for sure. And you know, other than that, we're just super excited to get open. It certainly has been a rough year, and we've got a long ways to go still, but at the same time, we feel like we're building something really special here. We are going to get open at some point. I think that was the biggest worry for some folks, was that we were giving up. And I was very silent on social media for a while, and I'm trying to be less so now, and to really send the message to folks that we've got this, we're going to get through this, and you know, on the other side of it, Reclaim Arcade's going to be a thing, so stay tuned.
Awesome. That's so exciting.
It is.
I'm very excited. Fantastic. This has been fun. All right, great. Well, we are pretty much at time now. So again, he just posed a question to our listeners. So we have spaces where our listeners can respond to that. So please reach out to us, and Termite will let you know where in just a second. But reach out to us and let us know what your thoughts are on that. What are things, if you were thinking about going and you wanted to go to a physical arcade, a physical space to play games and have an experience, what kinds of things would make you more comfortable in the post-COVID era of gaming? So that is feedback that will be directly useful to someone who is actually doing that. Please let us know. Termite, where can the good pod smashers of the internet let us know, you know, respond to that feedback?
Before I answer that question, I will ask Tim, where can our pod smashers find you on the internet? Plug your everything that our audience wants to find. Reclaim Arcade, where are you?
So we are on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch. And you just search Reclaim Arcade. We're a fairly unique name. And so if you search Reclaim Arcade across any of those platforms, you should be able to find us. And we would love for you to follow, what do the kids say, like, subscribe, smash that bell, whatever the case may be. We would love for you to stay tuned for what we've got going on and see stuff there. I'm probably most active on Facebook, but I too post photos on Instagram here and there. And like you mentioned, I've been doing some more on Twitch here recently. So yeah, more soon.
All right. Sweet. Well, Pod Smashers of the Internet, you can find us at 80bitpodsmash.com. That's our landing website where there are links to Google Play, Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, whatever platform you would like, we are there. If not, find our RSS link and put that into your cell phone app of your choice, and you can find our podcast there. We're on social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, Spotify, and Twitter. I just went backwards.
Yeah, you did.
And we're also on Reddit. We have a subreddit. You can find a thread. You can create one and start a conversation of your own. We have a Discord server. That's the link to that Discord. It's on every single one of our social media posts and show notes on all of our podcast sites. We are weekly, as I mentioned earlier, on twitch.tv/80bitpodsmash on Wednesday evenings at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. 80bitpodsmash is 80bit podsmash. So please let us know what you think. Give us our feedback. Let us give your feedback to Tim here for Reclaim Arcade, and let him know what you think of this space and how excited you are to come play his games.
Awesome. Great. Any reviews? Any reviews to read on iTunes?
No, okay, nothing? So the good pull. So please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It's the best way for us to get attention through the algorithms that bubble us up into the discoverable feeds. So please, whatever you review us, whatever you give us, we will read on this show.
Yes.
Leave us a review.
We want it that bad. It. And yeah. Will you give us attention, we'll give you attention. That's how it works. That's
yep, and we'll read it. We are a family-friendly podcast, so we might have to censor your input, but whatever, how bad, how good, how trolly you want to be, this is your chance to make fun of us or to praise us or to hate us. Whatever you want to do, we will read it.
Absolutely. Great. Well, we will have a episode with some content next week. We haven't decided what that is yet, so it'll be a surprise, I guess, on Monday. So we will see you then.
And thank you once again, Tim, for letting us come into your space. Thank you for joining us for this conversation. It was awesome. We loved having you on our show, and we hope that our audience resonates with you and that we can work together in the future and we can continue to work like promotions. Maybe we do a live show here. Maybe we do a trivia night. But who knows the possibilities? I would love to have more interactions with you. So thank you for letting us be here.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yep. With that, right. We will see you next week.